Welcome to East Meets West, episode 295. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
Hey, Roger, we have sponsors starting next month again.
Uh-oh. We better be on the ball with these casts.
Yeah, no more forgetting to press record.
No more like, oh, I got a water heater I need to go fix, Tom.
You have a water heater to go fix?
Yes. It's caused me much consternation. My sister's water heater went out at her place. And I was looking at replacements. It's like $1,300 because the city, not San Francisco, but the city, Daly City requires to have all these things added on. I need an expansion tank, a filter on the gas. I'll have to replace the old valve and replace it with a ball valve variety. And then I got to put a metal post drilled into the garage floor because the water heater is located in the garage to prevent a car from accidentally hitting it.
That's just nuts.
It is. It's so more needlessly complicated than it needs to be. And even, I don't know.
Is it the government? Is that what's got you down?
This water heater has me down. It was manufactured by American Water Heater out in Tennessee. And you know, it was working pretty well. It's an 04 model, and generally these things last about 10 to 12 years, if not longer. It just stopped working one day. There was no gas going to the burners, so I thought maybe it's a thermocouple, replace that. But you can't because that particular model uses particular left-handed screw. And contrary to 99% of all the other universal thermocouples you can buy on the market, which are right-handed screw. So spent $20 for that, shipping, $50. That didn't work. It's like, oh, it must be the valve, the control valve / thermostat. Of course, no one makes, you know, any of these things for this particular model. So I had to trounce around. I found one in Lowe's, the only one they had. And now I can't connect the manifold nut to the bottom of it to get the gas from the control valve thermostat into the actual burner that heats up the water. I'm 95% done. I did a lot of the work yesterday. It took about 3 hours, a lot of sweat, a lot of bruised knuckles. I think I bruised a fingernail, and I have to go shoot tomorrow down in San Diego, and I got to wake up at, 5:30 tomorrow morning. Yeah, I'm having a day, a week, a month.
Let me ask you the one question, Roger. All right. Do you have some kind of mic ducking default setting? Because just the very ends of your sentences are getting clipped off.
I might.
This has nothing to do with your water heater problems or flying to San Diego.
I blame it on the Astro pod. Uzi, what's it? That's a USB headset connector. It connects a normal headset into USB, but takes audio out of my sound card.
Yeah, every time you pause, see, I didn't notice in the pre-show, but every time you pause when you're saying a few sentences, it ducks out and cuts off the first part of the next word that you say.
I'm sorry. I think it does that so when you're LAN gaming and you're getting really super intense, stray noises won't go in.
Yeah. Oh, it's a gaming headset. That makes sense.
Oh, it's a gaming module. The headset is designed for headset use.
Always trying to use something for another purpose. That's what I like about you, Roger. You're not just lazy.
No, I'm smart and lazy.
The smartest people are lazy.
That's true.
Or so Mark Twain said.
I think
Mark Twain said that. I don't know who said that.
It's funny how so many quotes are attributed to people that never spoke them. What's the most famous one he said about San Francisco? The
coldest winter I ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
Was not spoken by Mark Twain. It is a common myth, but he never
did
said
anyone those. Ever say that?
I think it was somewhere in a newspaper. No, it came along those lines.
H.L. Mencken.
Coldest winter in winter, summer, San Francisco. Snopes. Mark Twain, origins, camp, blah, blah, blah. Apocryphal Twainisms. So uttered a great many memories, but he did not say that one. However, Twain did say, if you don't like the weather in New England, just wait a few minutes. Having never really spent too much time in New England, I don't know what part of New England was.
I've heard everyone say that about everywhere I've ever lived or visited, frankly. Oh, if you don't like the weather in wherever we are, just wait a few minutes. Like, that just everybody seems to think that. I guess I haven't heard that much in L.A. That's one of the few places I haven't heard that. But San Francisco people say it.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, it's the wind will come up or the fog will come in.
I usually tell people if you want to change the weather, just drive 5 blocks or walk 5 blocks away. Change.
Right. Well, and that's kind of true in San Francisco. Exaggerating a bit, but not by much.
No, I actually went, and granted, these are pretty long blocks, but I went from where I live all the way down to on the other side of the freeway over the 280, which is roughly about 8 blocks, and the weather's completely different. One is sunshiny, the other one's covered with a low-hanging cloud/fog. It's pretty bizarre if you've never seen it. Some people are like, what the hell is this? It's like, well, it's microclimate and it's San Francisco. You get the worst and best of both worlds.
Did I tell you I got tricked into supporting Mitt Romney yesterday?
Wait a minute. How did Tom Merritt, critical thinker, get tricked into supporting Mitt Romney?
I went to 7-Eleven.
Oh, did you get one of those cups?
I had no idea they were doing that. So I go, okay. First of all, I never go to 7-Eleven for coffee, but there's this part of me that, you know, 7-Elevens were rare on the ground in Greenville, Illinois when I was growing up. And so 7-Eleven, McDonald's were like special occasion type places. And so there's a part of me that still responds to that, even though I know better. And every once in a while, I just want to go into 7-Eleven and get a coffee and a donut, you know? So I did. So the other day, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do that. So I go in, grab a cup, grab some coffee. I'm heading to work, get out of the car. I see someone from work and they're like, why do you have a Romney cup? And I look down and what I thought was just a red cup is actually a Romney cup. And it turns out they're doing this like vote with your coffee thing. And they have blue cups for Obama and red cups for Romney. And they say in big letters, Obama and Romney on them, which immediately I got very upset. And I was like, where's my Jill Stein cup, huh? How about my Gary Johnson cup? Where's that one?
They should make a white one where you can just take a Sharpie and write in your Kennedy.
The write-in cup. The none-of-the-above cup.
That would save them lots of money, give them a third option to the customers, giving them the illusion of more choice. And listen, everyone wins. Except unless you drink something that manages to seep through the outer coating of the cup and pick up some of that Sharpie ink, maybe.
Well, and as I was driving past this morning at the 7-Eleven, I looked over and they have big signs that were like, you know, vote, coffee vote, and the pictures of the. So it's not like they didn't warn me. I just wasn't paying attention. But I wasn't thinking about that I'd have to pay attention to the cup that I grabbed.
You know, I'll be honest, I haven't been into a 7-Eleven. Maybe for 6 months or a year. I mean, I've been doing a convenience store, but like an actual 7-Eleven.
Right, right.
Which is kind of weird because they are like the most ubiquitous convenience store on the planet. I mean, and throughout Asia, they're all over the place. And I remember going to them because they had that combination. You could get a Slurpee, but they also had the Big Gulps. Remember, they're the first store to do that where you could get literally a half-gallon size cup that you could fill to the brim with soda. And thus began America's lifelong battle with morbid obesity.
Right. It was the harbinger. Not the cause, just the harbinger.
Yeah. It was the sign, oh the times.
Yeah. You want the large coffee? You're going to pull around back. We'll start the hose. I don't know. I don't know what it is about chains. I have mixed emotions about chains and malls. Like, there's just that part of me that was deprived of them growing up that is fascinated with the ability, with the idea that I can just go and easily access them at any time. But of course they're usually disappointing almost always.
They're gross.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that stuck with me through high school, like having been exposed to it through high school and college, can't stand malls. I cannot stand shopping malls. Doesn't matter where it is. If it looks and it's arranged and it's structured like a mall, I hate it. It's just annoying.
I love malls.
I don't hate people. I just dislike a great many people. And most of them tend to be in malls. I don't like stores.
So it's actually not the mall. If the mall was empty, you'd be fine with it. If it was Dawn of the Dead sort of situation, you'd be cool.
Nah, maybe. I don't like the interior. I don't like the, to me, it's just, I don't know. It's just something about it just kind of annoys me. I think it's because it is something I used to go to because I had nothing else to do. Like, oh, let's go hang out at the mall. So to me, that just, I think subconsciously it just means I'm wasting my time because I have nothing better to do.
Well, like, and that is what causes, that's what engenders the hatred of chain stores and malls, right? Is this sort of, it's all we had and it was bad. Like I was on the corner growing up and went down, and instead of a great diner or a lovely restaurant or an interesting shop, we had the faceless mall. All the stores are the same and they're all disappointing. And that engenders my suburban anger as a child, and I grew up to rebel against the system. I mean, that's sort of the template story you hear from kids. But I didn't have that experience. Growing up, we didn't get a McDonald's until I was in junior high, I think.
That's cosmopolitan.
Yeah, and it wasn't. It was the opposite of cosmopolitan. And of course, we loved the McDonald's once we got it because it was weird. It was unique. It was cool. We didn't have to drive 20 miles to go to it.
It was a
novelty. We never got a Walmart. There's still no Walmart in Greenville, Illinois. You still have to drive down the road if you want to go to a Walmart. And in fact, there used to be a Pizza Hut, but it went out of business. And it got ran out of business by the local Mario's, which is just a local Sicilian guy who moved into town and started a pizza joint. And I think there's a Domino's now, and there's a Taco Bell KFC combo out by the highway. But the chains never engrossed on Greenville. And so I never built up that
loathing,
disgust, that disgust that familiarity breeds. It was more of they were always exotic things that I didn't have access to.
I'll be honest. I spent most of my life near a Trader Joe's, and I love Trader Joe's.
No kidding. How old is Trader Joe's?
Trader Joe's has been around since the 70s.
Oh, geez. See, I didn't discover the ways of Trader Joe's till I moved out to San Francisco in 99.
And what I find interesting is, I'm fine. Honestly, I'm fine with chains as long as I personally think they provide a good service or product. Like, I don't have a gripe against Target.
Sure.
They sell certain things.
I think I've outgrown Target, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't have a gripe against them either.
I don't like Walmart, and I think it's just the way they organize their stores. It just kind of reminds me of a Kmart, and you're gonna laugh when I say this without the charm, because Kmart is where I used to go, and some people might laugh at me. Because I needed weird stuff. I shouldn't say weird stuff, but just I need a fire safe. I need that odd timing belt for my car. I could get it at Kmart, and I could get it cheap. I could buy spark plugs.
But isn't that Walmart? I mean, Walmart replaced Kmart because they had everything and more. They had trampolines and timing belts and fishing rods for cheaper.
It depends. It could very well be just a regional thing. Like, the ones I go to don't seem to have a lot. Like, the one in Vegas is really big, and they have a lot of the big popular items, but the hard-to-find stuff that Kmart used to just carry because they would carry all the same stuff no matter which Kmart it was, it's not the same. Like, you could buy car rims at Kmart off the shelf, and they would, for whatever domestic automobile you might have. And granted, they weren't the greatest on the planet, but they worked, and they were generally not that ugly. If you consider a white rim on your car that's blue, ugly. But it's just kind of weird. It's just I literally found a lot of things I can't find without going to a specific automotive store or a athletic store, like something very specific. Kmart just for some reason kept everything. Probably why it didn't do so well. In the retail wars, because they just didn't have a clue on how to target their products to the local traffic.
Target. I don't know. I for instance, Starbucks is one of those chains that often gets a lot of hatred directed at it. And I don't have any hatred towards Starbucks. What I've found is that people kind of want to hate Starbucks when there are people who want to hate Starbucks because it is a chain that's driving out the better coffee shops. But what I found is that it doesn't. Generally, if a coffee shop's good, a Starbucks isn't going to drive it away. And what Starbucks has done is provide coffee options in places where there have never been coffee options, which I think is a good thing. My problem with Starbucks is I don't like their coffee very much.
I'm very ambivalent towards Starbucks. I don't drink, as you know, I don't drink coffee. And I think all the rest of the stuff they serve is very expensive and not very tasty. And so I tend to never, ever go into a Starbucks, ever.
I almost never drink Starbucks anymore because the only times that I would drink it would be on the road and at the airport. And I don't really drive very far. I don't take road trips that often. And as far as getting it at the airport, all the airports have other options now, it seems like. Like, it's not just dominated like by Starbucks like it used to. So I can find Pete's Coffee, or I can find a kind of a local option sometimes at airports. In fact, I can't remember where it was. I think it was Seattle Airport. They actually had, like, a local Seattle coffee.
Best. Oh, Seattle's Best or something like that?
It wasn't Seattle's Best. It wasn't Tully's. It wasn't something like that. It was, like, a small mom-and-pop chain that had an outlet in the airport, because airports like to do that now. They like to have the local stuff to localize the feel of the airport. So I almost never have to drink Starbucks, but I don't turn my nose up at it if I'm like, oh, you know what? I was at the FedEx store and I really want coffee and I don't feel like going all the way over to Pete's, so I'll just grab one from Starbucks. It's fine. It's just not very good.
Yeah. I think as I get older, I would rather suffer than spend money on something I don't think is truly all that, you know, great. Outside of,
well, there's money and there's money. I mean, yeah. You could say that, like, oh, $3 for a cup of coffee, that's outrageous. And maybe it is, but it's still only $3.
Oh no, it's not even that. It's just like, for example, if I'm super hungry, I might consider a McDonald's, but I definitely, you know, to say that I would go in just because there's nothing around, I probably would do it. I'd probably starve some more because after the initial bite, I generally don't like their burgers. Like, you know, the whatever.
Oh, yeah. I never get. You know what I get at McDonald's? I get chicken McNuggets, which I don't consider chicken.
Well, yeah.
But I do consider salty grease, and I like it.
It tastes good, but like
fried
right
salty
after,
grease.
Right after I eat it, like 10 minutes later, I feel sick. And that
it doesn't happen to me. So,
well, I don't feel like
I wouldn't want to eat it either if it made me feel sick.
It makes me feel like I don't know if you've ever had like right after a sugar rush where you feel really drained and lethargic. That's what McDonald's food does to me after about 10 to 15 minutes after I eat it. There's something in it, but it's like it tastes great. I feel okay. And then suddenly it hits me and I go, and I kind of power down and I hate that feeling, so I generally like, you know, I'd rather be hungry and wait.
Let's see, so you can't eat fast food because it does something to your glycemic index. You don't drink coffee. You don't really drink alcohol. You're turning into an Adam Ant song.
I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. That's
you're
who
just
I am.
Naturally self-righteous. You're not trying to be. It's just the way your body's built.
Well, I tell Jen, my girlfriend, it's like I generally don't eat fatty foods because. When I was growing up, like really fatty, high cream levels tend to give me a really bad upset stomach.
Oh, right. No dairy. Okay.
Yeah. No, it's not just dairy, but just like really, you know, high fat content.
What do you eat? You eat air?
No, I eat very lean meat. I eat like chicken and turkey, rice, vegetables.
Beef? No beef? No steaks?
No. I try to cut out red meat.
Oh yeah, but that's not a problem with it making you feel bad or anything. That's just a conscious choice.
That's more because my dad's side tends to have a naturally high occurring cholesterol. Just you know, naturally high occurring cholesterol. So I try to avoid eating red meat or anything that would boost it up unnecessarily.
Well, that's probably not a bad thing. Although I think the red meat scare is overdone. It can't hurt to avoid it. Put it that way. I think eating a steak once a week would probably not hurt you, but why bother?
I mean,
if you don't love it.
Like, occasionally my dad will throw me, like, you know, a big, like, you know, 10 pounds of prime rib. like, here, you can have this. It's like, okay, and they'll feed me for a week.
Sure.
But after that, I'm just tired of red meat. And then I'll
That's a lot. I don't know, 10 pounds. Jeez.
I don't know what it is, but I think as I get older, I also get very cranky about not feeling good. And so I try to avoid it. Like, I stay away.
Well, but does red meat make you feel bad too?
It kind of. It's not that it makes me feel bad, but you ever eat something really kind of greasy and you feel it?
You say this all the time. When I got to eat, if you have something, you're like, oh, it's so greasy. I'm like, really? Greasy food doesn't affect me at all. Like, I try not to eat greasy food all the time because I know intellectually it's bad for me.
You are descended from a tribe of people who probably feast on this stuff on a regular basis.
Maybe.
I come from a more delicate...
a more delicate lineage.
That's what Jed says. No, you're like a flower. I don't know. I think all my dietary issues, allergy, like I had food allergies growing up, so I didn't eat a lot of eggs or anything like that. And so it kind of whittled away what I could eat and be happy with.
You know, I was reading in an article in Scientific American, as I am wont to do, the other day, and they're finding that a lot of food allergies can be eliminated by slowly giving small amounts of food that you're allergic to and building it up over time. So they've done this with egg allergies where they like powder the egg and give like very small tablets of egg to the allergic people and then boost the dose very slowly and it gets rid of the allergy in most cases. Now, not in all cases. There are some cases that the person is just too sensitive and that treatment won't work. But for nut allergies, for gluten allergies, for egg allergies, they've been able to defeat it in a lot of people.
My cousin is definitely allergic.
And the nut allergy is a great one. It's like, gosh, if you can get people over the nut allergy, that just makes life so much easier. The gluten allergy too. They're both like it's just almost impossible to exist in normal life with those allergies because nuts and wheat gluten are everywhere.
And I'm thinking, like, you know, a lot of people, I don't know how much I believe this, but the whole train of thought, like, well, we are not supposed to eat those. That's why you're allergic to it. So yeah, but I mean,
no,
to say that as a species we're not supposed to be.
Well, yeah, we're not supposed to breathe pollen, so we shouldn't be breathing air either, because it's actually a failure in the ability to pass along allergens in youth. That's why these allergic issues weren't as big a long time ago, because we weren't as hygienic.
We were exposed
to allergens, and breast milk passed along a lot of inoculation to allergies. And with formula and lack of breastfeeding, that doesn't do that. So it's not that we aren't meant to eat nuts. For goodness sake, that's what the freaking species survived on the savannah. It's that we just didn't, you know, we've changed the way we build up our resistance to allergies, and our immune system is out of whack.
Isn't that the whole thing with not the mumps? What was it? What was the big thing that you get vaccinated for now? You know, iron lung. Roosevelt had it when he was growing up. Oh, why can't I remember the name of it?
Measles.
The what?
Measles.
No, not measles. It was really debilitating. It's,
rubella.
Starts with an M. It starts with an M.
Mumps.
Mumps. No, I just said mumps. Not mumps. It's polio. That doesn't start with.
Oh, polio. Right, right, right.
Which
and
was
the Salk vaccine.
Yes, and they believed it was due to like super hygienic conditions, because what they found were people in relatively high hygiene areas were affected, while people, especially people living in lower economic poverty level situations, didn't occur as much because they were exposed to those germs, disease, or whatever at an early age, and their body can slowly build an immunity to it. But with people who grew up until childhood without being exposed to it, it was very debilitating immediately.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's I think we like to jump to a lot. You know, this is a longer conversation about science and how we misperceive things. But I think the impulse with people who are like, oh, well, maybe we aren't meant to eat these things we're allergic to. I think it's the right impulse, but you need to actually wrap your head around a lot more facts before you go with that. It's not like things aren't that simple. And it turns out like, well, actually, you got the right impulse, which is what does nature teach us? You know, maybe we should follow nature. But the problem with the allergy is that it's not because of the natural process. It's because of the unnatural process. And there is a natural process for teaching our immune system what's actually a threat and what isn't. And when we subvert that at an early age, then we get things like wheat gluten allergies and lactose intolerance and things like that. So actually, nut allergy better than lactose intolerance. That's more of a genetic thing, but it's a genetic thing that's adapted over time because it's like, hey, we got a lot of dairy we can eat and we want to survive in this region, so let's eat the dairy.
I like dairy. I like ice cream. I like, yeah. I can drink low fat, non-fat milk, but whole milk, oh, that puts me down.
Yeah.
I think it's just stuff that too much cream. That's why I don't eat butter. There's a lot of things I don't, I must seem like the most boring person to dine with. I get my salads without any dressing.
I do
like,
that actually.
It's like pasta, like no Parmesan cheese, light on this, light on that, you know. Like
I'll just have bland brown rice, please.
That's pretty much it. But I eat so much of it. I pack it away like a linebacker some days. That's probably because I don't eat that much of it.
I could eat pretty much anything. I'm not saying I have an iron stomach. I mean, if I eat spoiled stuff, I feel it pretty fast. But as far as like types of food, I haven't really run into anything I can't stand to eat, or that makes me sick if it's in good shape. and I don't know. I haven't run into a lot that I don't like to eat. I pretty
that
much to- almost
totally
like
reminds,
everything.
Totally reminds me of two of my friends who said this like, oh, we got iron stomachs. And we went over to Hometown Buffet. I'm not sure if people know. It's a big kind of buffet, all-you-can-eat style chain restaurant. And like Fresh Choice, they kind of they add certain things to all the food so you don't eat too much of it. They add flour, cornstarch, to thicken up. And so I ate this. Like, oh, I don't feel so well. So I ducked in the bathroom, did my business. And I came back and my friends were laughing at me. It's like, aha, you got to, you know, we got cast iron stomachs. And they're like, they're that delicate flour again. Anyways, we drive back to my parents' place to grab some stuff, and suddenly they had to go duck into the bathroom. It's like, aha! I just happened to meet sooner than you did.
You have a faster stomach is all it is. Yeah, I'm, you know, my wife, she's got a fairly iron stomach. We'll eat something that's a little off at a restaurant maybe or something, and I'll be like, ooh, that didn't sit well with me. And she's like, I'm fine. And I've even been in cases where like two or three people at a dinner, like something was wrong. And she's like, I don't got an issue with it.
it could very well be. I wonder if it's something to do with your parents cooking. Like if your parents were like very, very exploratory in their various ingredients, and you're just kind of like, hey, your stomach just slowly adjusts. All these things.
Well, but wouldn't that see, I think your taste for things has to do with your parents' cooking, which is totally not true in my case, because my parents cooked me very mundane and boring things, and I really like to eat weird things. It could be something where like my mom cooked the crap out of stuff. Like I didn't think pork chops were any good because she just cooked them until they were dry. And so maybe my stomach didn't build up a resistance to certain kind of foodborne,
like trichinosis.
Yeah. Well, not trichinosis particularly, but just foodborne bacteria, because she was so adamant about making sure there was nothing living on our food. And I didn't build up their resistance. That's possible.
Yeah. I don't know what to do. I mean, like if you have kids, you just roll them out in the dirt every once in a while.
I think you just be moderate, you know? You know, like, yeah, you want to keep them clean, teach them to wash their hands and all that. I think being sanitary is very good, but don't spray every surface with antibacterial, you know, spray, and just kind of have a moderate approach to it. It's important.
Antibacterial soap, the worst thing to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially the tricyclics.
Just get rid of them. But you don't need them.
Yeah. The alcohol ones aren't bad, but they could be overused.
Just have running water and soap to just mud.
Hot water and sudsy soap on the hands. That's all you need. Yeah. I agree. Not a medical professional, but I've had medical professionals who say the same thing.
And that's why I always chastise them when they go touch me before they wash their hands. Yeah. You wash your hands before you touch me.
All right, well, that's it for this episode of East Meets West. I believe I actually recorded it this time. Apologies for the last time. You can find us at sabrilliant.com/EMW. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.